Welcome to Life with the Girlfriends.
Don't you just love that music?
I do. It makes me so happy.
You know, when I was back in France in the 60s, we really were real cool.
Yes, that's what you thought.
Yes. We smoked these long cigarettes.
Yes.
And we drank lots of wine.
And gratefully, only I'd be like 12 to do it.
And, you know, I used to love the mimes. All the time.
And you
all mimes, all the time.
Yes. What was your favorite mime move? What was that favorite mime
being,
move?
Being trapped and having to get out of a box.
That was your scene. Mine was always blowing, the wind blowing.
Oh, yes.
Like, oh, the wind's blowing. And maybe I'm holding an umbrella. Oh, no, I'm holding an umbrella. The wind's blowing. And the umbrella went backwards. Oh, my gosh. Oh. The humanity of it all.
Oh.
The humanity.
So can I say... Hello, girlfriend.
Hello back to you.
My sweet and beautiful daughter. I'm Christine Marie, for anyone who doesn't know that yet. And this is my lovely daughter, Julie.
Yes. We're Christine Marie and Julie, and we're here with Life with the Girlfriends.
We are Life with the Girlfriends.
We've been gone for a while.
Just a little bit.
Yes. Mostly because it's just been a crazy life cycle, and we need to take a break.
Life with the Girlfriends got a little lifey.
Yeah.
Little dicey.
Mom always says, choose life. Keep choosing more life. Keep choosing more life. Well,
that's
there
right.
comes a point where you're just like, I can't choose any more life.
No.
It's busting out.
But we, you know, we have, we love Life with the Girlfriends, but we've decided that, well, maybe not, that we're going to have more life with the girlfriends. We're just going to live that way.
Exactly.
More life
Keep
with
it.
The girlfriends.
And it's interesting because we're interviewing an author tonight, Tom Zuba. And he wrote Permission to Mourn, A New Way to do Grief.
Yes, yes.
And you have you're a psychotherapist.
Yes.
You have your certificate in grief counseling. And
yes.
We're like, what's the new way? And it's I love his book because we're going to talk about it later with him. And so I just want to give some teasers. There were many questions that came up during his writing the book that I've always had.
Mm-hmm.
And how we deal with these questions that come up, especially being on a spiritual journey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having the pleasure of having a mom who not only was a psychotherapist and a New Ager and, you know, a good Catholic girl
and a psychic.
And here I am. You know, I've been on a spiritual journey since the day I was born. I'm probably in utero, I'm sure. I felt some kind of spiritual meaning to it all. And I hear you lowering the volume of my yelling in your ear.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay. No, I will. I'll go a little calmer.
No.
And
don't change a hair for me,
oh,
darling.
Oh, that's good. Don't wear your pretty little hair.
Don't wear your pretty little hair.
There you go. And so, you know, the last 10 years really focusing on the law of attraction when that came out so
mm-hmm.
big, and
mm-hmm.
and you know, you can create your reality, and even like you know, reading the Bible and thinking about Jesus and thinking about. Wait a minute, if we believe and we have faith, we can move mountains or we can heal ourselves.
All you have to have is the faith
mustard
the size
seed.
Of a mustard
yeah.
seed. That's the smallest seed on earth.
Yes.
And yet things go awry.
Yes. And I love how he deals with it, and we're going to talk about that because I have those questions come up, and I know we all do, right?
Yeah, we do, girlfriend.
And so we're not finding these, a new question comes up. But I know the better the question.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that true?
The wider the answer. The more expansive
yeah.
the answer will be.
I mean, when you get to that point where you go, wow, that was a good question.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, that's not just scratching the surface. That's going deep, you know, that
yeah.
question. You know what I have a fear about tonight.
What's your fear?
I have a fear that... Our guest, Tom Zuba. I'm going to call him Tom Zumba.
I know.
Oh, my God.
That's your fear that you're going to call him Zumba?
Because I just got through doing Zumba.
Well, I think he mentions in his book, he talks about this idea of one thing to heal is to really get back into your body, to heal your body. And I think he mentions taking a Zumba class. So Tom Zuba doing Zumba.
Hey, they should pay him.
They should pay him. I should ask him. I saw Tom yeah. Zuba. Is
I
that
want
your choice?
If it's IRDA, can I get 10% of that?
I say that one just is out in the universe.
That's true. It's not like, oh, Christine Marie, you're the first one that ever taught that.
Exactly. Exactly. like Zumba. Oh, Zumba. Ah, you know. Well, hey, you know what though? I like your entrepreneurial spirit.
Thank you.
I mean,
thank you.
When well, you listen, hear the big guys getting 10% off of billions, you know,
yeah,
or
I'll take that. Yeah.
Darn right. I put this package together. You just made an introduction.
This sounds like a moment to have a commercial for our Clutterfly Effect book.
Yes.
Speaking of 10% or royalties and all
right.
that good stuff.
And you just go to Amazon.com, you put in the Clutterfly Effect, and our book will come up.
Yeah.
And you just buy it right there.
What's the tagline?
Tweak your way to total transformation by decluttering your life.
A lot of T's in that. But, you know, it's so important to...
By design.
Yes.
You wanted a lot of T's.
I wanted a lot of T's. I heard that, you know, that really brings more royalties in.
Really, yes. He did like the way it sounded.
But, you know, I'm telling you, the decluttering your life thing, it works.
Mm-hmm.
It works psychologically to declutter. It works, you know, physically getting rid of the clutter in your home or in your car. Like today, your dad and I went out and the car got back from the mechanics and stuff, and it was like dirty, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just inside was and it felt good. It felt good to just like get in there and scrub and get that car cleaned and decluttered. And it's good to emotionally declutter.
Oh, yeah, it is.
For sure.
It is. I mean, it's good. We have to be, because I think it's what Tom talks about too in his book a lot. It's this idea that we have beliefs around death.
Mm-hmm.
And we can grieve for other things. We can grieve for the loss of our youth. We just saw one episode of Slap. We kind of binged Slap on the Slap.
Yeah, we did yesterday.
Yeah.
Yes, we did.
Well, I did it more. You did it a couple episodes.
Yes.
And they mentioned grieving for your youth. I mean, we have these losses, businesses, finances, relationships, and then we have the death of loved ones. And the only way you get around not having these losses around you is either you run away and hide and have no connection to the outside, to anybody.
Mm-hmm. Live on an island.
Yeah, or you die first, you know,
mm-hmm.
and none of those sound really good.
Mm-hmm.
So inevitably we will all have to deal with this. And you've lost your mother and, you know, and two brothers,
mm-hmm.
and your father. And,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I've lost my grandmothers,
mm-hmm.
who I've had deep relationships with. And and I can say I haven't been... my core family hasn't been touched yet, if
mm-hmm.
that, you know. And,
yes.
And,
although with Normano, your dad...
Yeah,
in February, in Michigan, having a heart attack, 2:00 in the morning or something, you know, living through that and feeling blessed that, you know, there is a came out of that and, but that it comes close sometimes,
yeah,
you know,
it does,
yeah, and also too, there's this, you know, it is a lot about you're talking about loss. And there's big loss and small loss and there's loss sort of like with Tom, I'm sure he'll tell his own story, but you know, it's the loss out of the natural order of things.
Right.
As opposed to like grandparents going and things like that, which is, you know, sort of in the natural order of things.
Right.
None of it's, you know, easy, but
no, and he talks about I don't want to give too much away yet, but he, you know, he talks about connecting with your loved ones, and I loved what you said too about that, well, about timing and so forth. But I want to kind of bring this back to a little pop culture at the moment, because I don't want to deny the fact that tonight's a loss for people who are in love with Mad Men. Tonight's the last episode, the series finale of Mad Men on tonight. Now, you were never a fan.
Because I lived it, girlfriend. I lived it.
There you go.
Yeah.
You lived it.
I worked in an advertising firm all during college.
And so you were done with it. You
yeah.
were lived it.
I was the girl with the tight skirt and the big boobs. And you know.
Yeah, sure you were.
Yeah. That took shorthand.
No. That's right. Exactly. Sure you are.
Wah, wah, wah.
Hey, whatever
floats
whatever,
your boat.
Yeah, whatever floats your boat, whatever character you want to play. I love that.
That's right.
So,
isn't that sound good, though? You know, oh, honey, I don't have to watch Mad Men. I lived it.
That's right. And I'm thinking, I know you. you've done stuff like that, mm-hmm. and so forth. But anyway, so I just want to see if our guest is on yet. Is Tom? Are you there yet?
I am. I'm here.
Oh, hello, ah. Tom. I'm so sorry we didn't hear you come on. I want to introduce everybody to you real quick. Tom, everybody, this is Tom Zuba, and Tom, before you came on, my mom said, I wonder if Tom Zuba loves Zumba. And I said, I think he mentions that in his book. that you said to take care of your body, to heal yourself, and even take a Zumba class. So I go, he might like Zumba. And if our engineer is listening, if you could just make Tom's volume up as high as it can go, I'd really appreciate that. So, Tom, you are a life coach, an author. You've been on the Oprah Show, and you wrote your book, this lovely book, Permission to Mourn, A New Way to Do Grief. And first off, do you mind if I just...
Julie, you should just say you're Julie.
I'm Julie, yes. First off, Tom, I just want to say how lovely I enjoyed your book from cover to cover. And... how I love the way, I'm going to get this out of the way initially, because it's written in a different format in the sense that I think if you are in the midst of going through something and incredibly hard and difficult, the loss of a loved one, the way Tom wrote his book, it varies in writing patterns and such. You know, I wouldn't say it's poetry, but the way it's spaced made it so easy to consume that it wasn't effortful. And I don't know if that was intentional on your part. So I'm going to ask you that question. Was that intentional to make it so easy for someone to just consume your words?
This is what's really, really fascinating, Julie. It was intentional that the book be accessible by anyone at any time. And I was very, very sensitive to those folks who are in the very, very beginning. And the beginning could be a month, it could be 6 months, it could be 6 years. The beginning depends on how much work someone has done. But I wanted folks that were in the beginning to be able to pick up the book, open it, and be with it. I didn't want it to be so overwhelming that they felt they just had to close the book. But I'm as amazed and really stunned at the actual format as most people are. And In retrospect, this is what I find really fascinating, and my hunch is that you too will too, particularly after I've, you know, skimmed through your book. Number one, my wife was a huge, huge fan of E.E. Cummings. And I don't know if you guys remember Jane Fry's book, A Million Little Pieces.
Oh, yes.
But I love that book. I love the style that he wrote that book, and I was really mesmerized by it. So when I revisit my book now, I think, well, there's certainly some E.E. Cummings in there. There's certainly some James Fry in there.
Yeah.
And it's my own, you know, like twist on that. My hope is that the reader will feel like I'm literally sitting next to them, speaking to them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And definitely that is what the reader gets from you, that reading your book, Permission to Mourn, A New Way to Do Grief, you're right there, you've been through it. I want you to share with our audience the story, your story and how you came to write this book, and that you were as authentic as you could possibly be and allowing us to be authentic as we needed to be during grief. And real quick, you mentioned that it goes, it's okay that, especially in the beginning stages of grief, that you may not want to leave your bed. You may want to sleep all the time. And I thought, yes, as I'm lying in my bed, I'm like, you know, this is a perfect book to have next to you in your bed, because as you're turning over and you're like, okay, I can read a little bit right now. And this, you can consume this book knowing that Tom has been there and has, well, you know, Tom, could you share your story with the, with our lovely listeners out there, our girlfriends out there?
I will, but I really appreciate you bringing up what you just brought up, because I have talked to so many people who have said to me, I wish I could stay in bed. I just wish I could stay in bed all day long. And inevitably, I say to them, have you ever done that? And 99.9% of the people I talk to say, no, I would never do that. And I say, why not? And they look at me like, I don't know. And I say to them, if you need me to give you permission to stay in bed, stay in bed. Stay in bed as long as you need to. Very, very few people are still in bed. You know, you will get out when you are good and ready.
That's a big point I want you to make. And reading your book, it's, okay, growing, you know, in the last 10 years, focusing on law of attraction and focusing on how powerful your emotions are and that you want to attract from a positive emotion. And so in some ways, we have trained our brain to deny ourselves these deep, hardcore emotions of sadness and grief. And if they touch us, to quickly move on. Even if they're like, hey, you had a huge loss in your life, it's okay to feel this way. It's okay to put, you know, to not get out of bed for a couple of days. It doesn't mean you're going to stay in bed forever. Just, you know, allow yourself to feel.
And this is where I think we get lost.
Yes.
We have been taught, most of us, which feelings and emotions are positive, which ones are negative, you know, which ones are good, which ones are bad, which ones are appropriate, which ones are inappropriate. Feelings just are. They just are. And if I'm feeling crappy or pissed off or really, really angry, when I'm able to be with that feeling, observe the feeling, be with it, not judge it, but instead love the fact that I am currently feeling that feeling. My ability to love the now, you know, love the place I'm in, that's the key to transformation. So I'm not resisting, I'm not fighting, I'm actually loving the place I find myself in. Mm-hmm. Is that easy to do? Not necessarily, particularly at first. Is it possible? Absolutely. That's the key to transformation.
Absolutely. This is Mama. This is Christine. Tom, I enjoyed your book too, and you're so right about emotions. You know, we tend to make it. We tend to add misery to the misery by getting in there and like, oh, I'm judging now myself on. And harshly on how I'm feeling, like, why shouldn't I be over this, or shouldn't I be, you know, not feeling so bad? And I think it just adds to the misery that we judge ourselves. And if we can give ourselves, like you said, that beautiful permission, and then guess what? You get to be in the now then, right? If you've given yourself permission, and that's a place that we can move forward from.
And the truth of the matter is, the only place that healing and transformation occurs is in the present moment. And when we're living with loss, and I did hear your conversation before I came in. Yes, what I'm addressing in the book is the death of someone we love. We often think of that you know, as the most devastating loss. But every day, in many, many different ways, we all experience losses. It could be the loss of our job. You know, our house is going into foreclosure. We're getting a divorce. Our puppy died. We gained 20 pounds. You know, we don't like the way our hairdresser cut our hair. Those are all losses, and there are lessons to be learned from all of them. Mm-hmm. And when we're willing to feel whatever it is that comes up as a result of that loss, as I said, that's where the transformation can occur. The old way of doing grief, and this is what most of us do because we don't know any better. No one ever suggested there was a different way. But the old way is repressing and denying and pretending and numbing. Americans are phenomenal at numbing every single feeling and every single emotion. And we have so many creative ways to be awake 24/7 and be numb for most of that ride.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm suggesting there's a new way to do it. And that grief is not the enemy. Grief truly can be one of our greatest, most powerful teachers when we're willing to dance with it.
Absolutely. I can remember, I think I probably was in third or fourth grade, but one of my classmates, his dad died suddenly, and he cried. You know, he kind of acted out in class, and I can remember the nun just like, "What are you doing? Your dad would be so ashamed of you," and you know, kind of like the keep a stiff upper lip and put, you know, and I just remembered even at that young age just feeling like horrified that, you know, here he's going through this, and now he's being bad. The nuns are saying, "Oh, no, you just can't even do that." So, these first impressions of, you know, I don't know if you've, you know, had, you know, young experiences when you were young, of some kind of loss like that. But it sort of sets a tone, you know, for you.
It absolutely does, and in retrospect, my life is unbelievably fascinating. And I truly, truly believe that life prepares us for life. When I was six years old, my little brother Danny died the day after his baptism. So at a really, really young age, I had an experience with a really intimate death. And my parents taught us, number one, that Danny would always be a part of our family. We would always talk about him. We would honor the day that he died. We would celebrate his birthday. And that was, he died in 1963. So they were way, talk about madmen. I mean, they were way,
yes,
way, way. They were way ahead of their time.
Yeah.
But they gave me such a gift. I mean, you asked me to tell a little bit about my story, and I'm just going to give just a thumbnail sketch. And if anybody's really interested, they can go to my website, which is my name, tomzuba.com, and, you know, really read more in depth about it. And
yeah, it's a wonderful website, everyone.
Thanks. I'm going to say this really, really quickly, but in no way am I being disrespectful or not honoring the path that I've taken. In 1990, which was a long, long time ago, my first child, our daughter Erin, died at 18 months. We were living in Oak Park, and she died at Rush Press Hospital of this really rare, unusual thing called hemolytic uremic syndrome. It was very sudden, completely unexpected, came out of nowhere. So we went home to an empty apartment. We had no living children. And a year later, our son Rory was born. And 4 years later, our son Sean was born. And when Sean was born in 1995, we had come to the place that I really worked hard to come to, and that was what people call a new normal. We had arrived. I was really, really grateful. And a couple of days after Christmas in 1998, my kids were 3 and 7, in the middle of the night, my wife turned to me and said she thought she was having a heart attack. I called 911. I rode in the ambulance with her to Oak Park Hospital. And 52 hours later, believe it or not, on New Year's Day, my 43-year-old wife died. Very similar to Aaron's death. It was unexpected, came out of nowhere. Nobody could really figure out why she died. It wasn't until a couple days later when some test results came in that she had something called a protein C deficiency. So there I am, sitting with my 3-year-old and 7-year-old, thinking, what the heck am I going to do now? And I worked really, 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 really hard. I found that new normal again. And when my oldest son, Rory, was 13, he went to 7th grade for 2 days. We were living in Rockford, which is my hometown, which is where I live now. And he had a seizure in the middle of the night. I am calling 911 again. I'm riding in the ambulance. To make a really long story short, 6 months later, on February 22nd, 2005, he died from a glioblastoma, which is the type of brain cancer you do not want to get because it's not curable. Mm-hmm. So I'm standing there with my son, Sean, who was in fourth grade at the time, thinking, Lord have mercy, what am I going to do now?
Right.
So that was 10 years ago. Sean is now 20, and as I kind of reflect back on my life, everything has prepared me to write this book. The reason I wrote it was because I don't want anyone to have to be in that deep, deep, dark pit of despair 1 second longer than they have to. I mean, my hope is that by me sharing my knowledge, my wisdom, and tools, that their path can be easier.
Mm-hmm. And you might think it is contradictory to say to embrace the pain gets you out of the depths of despair faster. You go, well, how is that possible? But it is possible. And I loved how you talked in your book this idea that you can even hold two emotions at one time, mm-hmm. or more than that. You can feel the despair and recognize the gifts and have gratitude for the gifts that your loved ones left behind for you.
It's so true. I mean, years ago, it was almost not acceptable to say, "Oh, I can have more than one emotion." You had to choose pick a side, or, you know. But the idea that you can have an and, you know, is liberating. It truly is.
Well, and it keeps us from being the victim. You know, I can become a participant. I can become a co-creator. You know, one of my great teachers is Byron Katie, and the title of one of her books is Loving What Is.
I love Byron Katie. I love her.
Yeah, I do too. When I'm able to wake up, you know, when I'm jolted into the present moment because the pain is so intense, and I wake up, then I can choose to love what is occurring in this moment. And it sounds so simple, and it is simple, but it's unbelievably complex as well. When I choose to love what is, that is when the healing occurs. That's the transformation.
Yeah, and you talk about in your book, too, of the beliefs that we have around death, and I'll bring up a common one that we might have, like the person went too soon. Oh, he died too soon, or she died too soon. God took them too soon. And that, can we look at that belief, and is that a belief that serves us? Because in some ways, you talk about in your book a lot, like, are you choosing life? Yes. And Christine mentioned all the time, like, if you have a choice to make, make the answer that says, I'm choosing more life,
right?
Whatever that may be.
Right.
And so when you're in book, you talk about this idea, like, and how that affects our view of God, how we see it. Can you share a little bit about that? Because I thought that was so interesting, your perspective on how and how we can change that one belief about
Absolutely. What's really fascinating is, and I know you both understand this, I finished writing the book about 2 years ago. I am on to my next book, my head. And my next book is 10 things that I've learned over the last 10 years since my son Rory died. And one of the things that's really bubbling up over and over and over again is that in every moment we are each a teacher and a student. Mm-hmm. And when I remember that, then nothing is ever wasted because everything has meaning. I'm either teaching or I'm learning. And I want to go back, if you guys don't mind, because you unknowingly were teaching all of us. And one of the things you said was that there are certain deaths, and I'm paraphrasing, but there are certain deaths that seem like they're out of the natural order of things.
Right,
okay,
right.
That's a belief that's really, really popular, particularly in the last, let's say, 30 years. And keep in mind, I have two dead children, but most of us think that a parent shouldn't bury their child, that the natural order of things is that the parent dies before the child dies. Okay, when I hold on to those beliefs, that causes me pain. Let me explain what the truth is. Up until the last century, 50% of children under the age of 12 died. The truth of the matter is, the natural order of things is that half of our children die.
Wow.
Okay?
That's shocking.
So, isn't it? But that's the truth. That's the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the DNA. That's the essence of who we are. So this phenomenon that we cling to, that our children shouldn't die, that's brand new. And the tighter we cling to it and the more we repeat it, the more pain we cause ourselves over and over and over again.
Absolutely.
Now, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. The
death of
a child is painful.
Yes.
It is painful. But as you said, we don't need to add additional layers of pain onto it by, frosting the cake with more beliefs that may or may not actually be true. But to your point, I really believe that the death of someone we love cracks us open. And it is supposed to crack us open. It's an invitation to each one of us to become the people we came to this earth to become. And there are certain fundamental questions that we get to ask and answer. And remarkably, most people, I think, live their whole life, and they never entertain these questions. But to me, one of the most, if not the most important question is there a God? And
yes.
I do not care if you use the word God or not. You could use, a higher power. If you like Star Wars, does the Force exist? But is there something bigger than us? And if there is, I'm not so interested in finding out who it is. I'm more interested in understanding what you believe it is. And the answer to that, is there a God? And if there is, what is it? That what is it colors absolutely everything. I totally agree
with you. You're in great territory here. I totally am enthralled with that question.
Yeah. I mean, I believe there is a God, and I believe that God is love, not the limited human love
Yes.
You know, that we talk about and we sing about and we read about, but this expansive, incomprehensible, you know, unbelievably divine love. And what you were saying earlier is love does not take anything too soon.
Right.
You know, love does not take our children too soon. Love does not take our spouses too soon or our parents too soon. That is not what love is.
Mm. You bet.
And that, that, yeah, when I read...
Wait a minute, Julie.
Yeah, well, it was just fascinating.
Let's just sit with
yeah.
that, because that is, it's so powerful. I mean, and you get a sense, okay, it's like a big breath of fresh air when you sense how ginormous the concept that we're, you know, the concept of God, this creator, this love that we... If we can only touch, I mean, if we can touch the garment, you know, if we can just, you know, see a part of the face without the veil, you know, all of that, then where do we go, you know? Then there's no separation here, you know. They
right,
may be
right,
there and we're here. Go ahead.
The closest I can get to it is I'm one of those people, I love summer. I love warmth. I love light. So when I think of the sun, you know, when I think of what would it be like to just to be drawn right into the center of the sun, to be surrounded by that warm, bright, all-consuming light, that's the closest I can get to imagining, you know, what it's really, really like to go home, you know, to be loved divinely, to be held lovingly in every single moment. And that's really comforting to me. I was really, really clear. My son Rory was sick for 6 months. I was really clear that we were being lovingly held every single moment. I was really clear that, and this, oh my heavens, when I say this, people go crazy. Everything is of God, including cancer, and that the cancer wasn't touching the essence of who Rory was. I was never, ever concerned about that. Oh, there's my dog.
we have a new puppy, so we understand barking dogs.
Yeah, we have our new Elliot, so...
Okay.
No problem.
So like I said earlier, it all goes back to, you know, do you believe in a God? And if you do, what's your understanding of what that is?
Yes. Right. Absolutely.
Right.
And it seems like the because when I came from Catholic school, I mean, God was kind of like Santa Claus. He knows when you're, you know, good or bad. But as I evolved and I get older and wiser, I mean, the bigness, the love of this God, compared to whatever problem, you know, we're suffering through or whatever, is like you said, it the potential exists to be held, to be comforted, and that's an allowing. I mean, it's a decluttering of some old beliefs. And sometimes those beliefs are hard because they were our parents, and then they were our grandparents, and, you know, there's a folklore tradition. But then to break through and find that a bigger perception, the bigger belief that is, like you said, not painful, but it allows you comfort, you know.
You know, it took me, honestly, about 50 years to realize that as an adult, I get to decide what I believe. That it doesn't matter anymore what the nuns taught me or what the priest said or what my parents believe or what my grandparents believe. Part of being an adult is making a conscious choice, choosing what I believe. And this, I mean, I told you about my second book. This is part of my second book, too. And this is, I just discovered this. I'm like, where have I been? But I call our body God's barometer. That when I'm present, yes, when I'm present, when I'm not numb, when I'm in touch with my body, my body tells me, does this feel good or does this feel bad? Mm-hmm. And I came to this earth to feel good. You know, my body resonates with truth. My body resonates with beauty.
Yes.
That's the direction
I'm moving.
That is
so true. I find that if my body's in pain or something, it's like the spirit, Holy Spirit, talking to me. You know, like, wait a minute, you may be on the wrong track here or something. I mean, it really is, like you said, a barometer. I just want to say too, I think people, you know, when I was my brother was killed in a car accident when I was, I think, in my 20s, but I had suffered loss and grief, but nothing like this. And I remember I had to go see a therapist, but I think it was God's blessing that I saw. She was a former nun, but it was almost like I was blessed to have someone to talk to that really understood like how you would be. I mean, because I've talked to people before, and you know, you're like, oh my God, you feel a lot worse after you have that conversation. You're like, no. But to have someone like you, that if someone is suffering and going and to feel this container of love that you are going to be holding them in, I think is you know, really just a blessing, really.
Well, in order to heal, we have to encounter ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so many people are so frightened to spend 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes in silence with themselves. So yes, I mean, that's one of the gifts that I offer folks, is creating that safe container where people feel loved and lovable. And everybody, every single one of us, what we want is we want to be seen, we want to be heard, and we want to be honored. And when we're in that safe space, intuitively, we know what we need to do to heal. And when someone accompanies us on that journey, we can heal. Everybody can heal. You know, another thing I say is none of us came to this earth to suffer. That's not why we came.
Well, in your book, you mentioned this, and I circled this a couple times over. You said, and part of your work here on earth is learning to live a full, joy-filled life with the death of your beloved.
Mm-hmm.
And I circled that because sometimes we forget.
You bet. You bet.
And one thing your book talks about, touches, is this idea that even though your beloved is gone, you still, if you choose to, get to have a relationship with that person.
Yes.
But this is the truth. Even if you don't choose to have a relationship, you still do. I mean, some people, the relationship they have with these people in their life that died consists of putting that person in a box, you know, tightly wrapping string around it, putting that box in a bottom drawer, and never, never, never going to open that drawer again. That's a relationship, and that requires a lot of effort. But imagine the pain in that relationship.
Yeah.
So we always have a relationship. Are we conscious to it, and does it bring us, you know, peace and joy and happiness, or does it bring us pain and suffering? We get to choose.
And as you describe that, I'm feeling like that person that does that I feel like a paralysis that's inside of them, as opposed to what I would like to feel like a river flowing, and you know, just keeping that river moving and flowing, and then the opposite is this coldness, this paralysis, and that's what I feel when you talk like that.
There's a beautiful way to describe it. Not only did the person who finished their work and left their physical body do what we call died, but the person that's still here, even though they're walking around, they are dying more and more and more every day.
Yes.
This is what I try to explain to people, is that I have very fluid, exciting, real, helpful, joyful relationships with my daughter, with my son, and with my wife. They are with me every day. I feel closer to them today, more aware of them today than I did when they were here in their body. That's very, very possible.
Yes.
And just feeling that way can open a little bit of space for healing if you're in that first part of grief or second part of grief even. It was just a wonderful, like I said, I circled that over and over again. And I also want to bring up this one point, too, in your book. You talk about this idea that you are stronger than you think you are. And you're the second person I've read that has said that this week. So when I hear it, I can't remember.
Oh.
But I'm like, okay.
that you need to hear,
girlfriend.
Yeah.
And so it's so true. We are all are stronger than we think we are. And one part in the book you said, remember a time when you've done something in your day that required you to be courageous, strong with grace even, that somebody else wouldn't have done it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, we all have that experience, and we forget that, you know, we are stronger than we think we are. And so I wanted to give you, that was a lovely part of the book.
Yeah. Hey, Tom. Tom, can you imagine, though, when we're growing up and we hear about, you know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and her stages of grief and, you know, and that final stage, you know, that she, you know, discovered was acceptance. And here we're talking about not just going beyond acceptance, but having this really cool, transformational relationships with, you know, your daughter, with your lovely wife and your son. I mean, we would just be blowing her socks off, Elizabeth.
Well, what's fascinating, and I'm glad that you brought her up, I love the work that she did, and it is so misunderstood and misused. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross worked with a handful of people who were dying, and in this group of dying people, she observed them going through these stages. And my belief is that at the time, because therapists, the therapeutic community, they really didn't know what to do for those of us that were grieving, those of us that didn't die, they used her stages. And towards the end of her life, she said, I wish I had never, ever, ever shared that with the world, because that wasn't my intention whatsoever.
Oh, my gosh.
That was never her intention, to suggest that there's this orderly, predictable, outline of stages that we go through. No, it's not true. I mean, anyone that's gone through it knows that's not the way it works.
Yeah, it's certainly not linear.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I've talked to who have said, you know, I haven't gotten angry yet, and I know I have to do anger first, and then I'll be able to move to the next. No, it doesn't work that way.
Well, Tom,
my hope is, I mean, and that's part of the reason that I wrote the book, was that we're expanding and we're looking at grief in a new way.
Yes. Well, I can't wait for your next book to come out, because it sounds like you're into some amazing territories and breaking some more boundaries, and wow, I can't wait to read that.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm putting the finishing touches on a video that my hope is will actually be available this Friday. This Friday, May 22nd, would have been my wife's 60th birthday, which I cannot believe. And my son died on February 22nd. So the number 22 is really, really significant to me. And on February 22nd, I gave this talk, and that's the essence of my book. It's these the second book of these 10 things that I've learned over the next 10 years. So on Friday, if all goes well, people will be able to get it.
We'll keep a good thought for that one. That sounds awesome.
Thank you.
If you want to get a hold of Tom, you can email him, but his website is TomZuba, TomZuba.com. You're a speaker. Are you still doing one-on-one counseling if people needing it through Skype and other ways?
I want to be clear. I'm not a counselor. I'm a coach.
Dicey counselor. I apologize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You may be a coach, but you're an amazing healer as well.
Thank you. Yeah. But yes. So yes, I mean, with Skype and FaceTime, I literally have clients all over the world, and it's such an incredible blessing to me, because I really believe that as I heal, you heal, and as you heal, I heal. I mean, I really, really do believe that literally we are all connected. We are all part of one whole. We're all in this together.
And are you still painting at this moment, or are you diving really deep into your book still?
No, I am. I love to paint. I'm an artist at heart. My painting right now is in the form of gardening. I mean, I love the spring. I love to garden. But I'm orchestrating those colors. I'm bringing them up. And yes, absolutely.
That's wonderful.
That sounds, exactly.
Thank you. Go ahead.
I was just going to share. My hunch is you're both aware of these paint and sip events that are kind of, the rage right now. And I just had something at Francesco's in Rockford. I'm going to do a couple more where we invite people to paint as a group, but we incorporate photographs and memorabilia of their loved ones who have died. So, we're honoring them and making a tribute and celebrating their lives.
When does that take place?
I'm going to do one for the Day of the Dead, so, right before Halloween. And then we're going to do another one before Thanksgiving, and that's going to be focused on things that we're grateful for.
Wonderful.
I think
that we have to make you an official girlfriend.
All right.
And definitely a Midwesterner, because we're in Dixon. So
I know. I was just in your beautiful town at that beautiful, beautiful facility last Thursday night. I loved it.
Yes.
It was a big turnout, too, I hear.
Yes.
So, Tom, we want to thank you for being on Life with the Girlfriends tonight. Thank you for your time. I know I've taken more than I asked for, and thank you for your generosity.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and, just the beautiful authenticity, rawness, transparency. Just want to say, you go. You're our official girlfriend right now.
And you can
Thank you both for doing what you do.
Thank you. And you can find out more about Tom at TomZuba.com, TomZuba.
Yes.
Thank you, Tom. Have a wonderful night.
You're welcome. Take care.
Thank you, Tom.
That was a great interview, and I was just looking at our time. I'm like, oh, no, we have to close in about a minute.
Oh, my goodness.
Time flows so fast.
That was
Tom.
Fast, yes. I mean, with this kind of subject and to have someone with that kind of heart, I mean, we're just scratching the surface.
Oh, for sure.
So much, we could talk so much more, and like he talked about his second book, we can't wait for that to come out. We'll have to have him on again because you can see when you allow your feelings and your emotions and everything to flow, you evolve.
Yes.
You just evolve as opposed to just, white knuckle it through this stuff.
And we are all teachers and students at the same time in our life.
Yeah, that was a great quote.
Yeah, I know, and I know with Marley's relationship with you, I know that I feel that all the time. Like you're my teacher.
Thank you, sweetheart. I feel like you are mine as well.
Oh, thank you, sweetheart. So it was been a wonderful show back. I loved it.
Yes, and I went to, everybody could go to TomZuba.com to get his book. which is a great little book. And also, you can, you know, at Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, all those places.
You can go to the Amazon.com and pick up our book, The Clutterfly Effect.
Ah!
Speak Rachel Transformation. Yay!
And we're working on our second book.
That's right. Everyone have a great night, and we'll see you next week.
And girlfriend?
We're going to miss Mad Men.
Don't you think it was great?
It was great. It was great. It was great.